This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. The BFM Breakfast Grill. Top interviews you can't afford to miss. Presented by the CIMB Group.
Today we speak to Leong Seng Kiat, the chief executive of the SGX-listed Nam Cheong Limited, which has evolved over four decades into one of the leading global marine players and Malaysia's largest shipbuilder of offshore support vessels, or OSVs, as they're known, Seng Kiat. And they're also involved in vessel charter. Now, of course, Nam Cheong is one of the older companies out there, established in the late 60s, but the first 20 years of its life are relatively quiet, and it appears that the business only really caught fire in the last 20 years. A quick history lesson on Nam Cheong then, please, Seng Kiat, if you can.
Yeah, of course. Thank you, Chuan. Now, Nam Cheong in 1968 is formed, and in the earlier days, of course, like any other shipyard, we build any type of boat that we are being commissioned to build, whether it's a fishing boat, whether it's just tugs and any sort. 20 years ago, when we start to build the OSV, which is the offshore support vessels, we gradually find ourselves a niche to build this more what we call a specialized vessel that is worked around the oil field. And I think the key milestone for us is back in 2005, where we start not just to build in our own yard, but also started to commission yard outside of our own country, which is in this case in China. We start to build this boat in China. So we outsource it to a third-party yard to build on behalf of us. And I think that where we see the company are growing leaps and bounds since then.
Now, of course, Seng Kiat, you do have a 12% global market share in this segment, which is no small matter. What were the key decisions that were made by, especially for yourself and your chairman, Tiong Sukong, to get to this point?
I think that we would, as a company, we was never think about how we should conquer the world at that point in time. But it is due to the overwhelming demand or request from our customers to be able to meet their requirement. So, you know, as a company, we always would like to help our customer to grow their business. And in doing so, we have grown ourselves. And in fact, over the last 20 years, some of the company that we do business with, they have been growing in leaps and bounds, like a company like Bumi Armada, a company like Perdana Petroleum. And as they grow, we also grow together with them. Now, I think the things we learn from Malaysia about the oil and gas and the boats and the asset that we built, we find that is equally up to the type of quality and standards and specification for the rest of the world. And back in 2005, 100% of our revenue is domestic. Today, 50% of our revenue is from Malaysia. The other 50% is from internationally. So hence, it's proven whatever we build for the domestic market is equally good and suitable for the international market.
So by way of perspective, the boats that you build, these offshore support vessels, they're actually catering mainly to the shallow water and to the mid-water segments, 400 meters in depth and less. Take about 1.5 to 2 years to build them. But your business model is quite interesting because you build and then you stock them as opposed to other shipbuilders who build to order. Now, that has been seen as a bit of a boon as well as a bane. Now, offer some perspective as to why you've gone down this path, Seng Kiat.
Okay. Again, it started because we want to deliver the vessel quicker to our client. During the boom period in the 07, 08, a particular vessel, it doesn't take 16, 20 months to build. They may take 36 months to build, some 40 months. The reason being the component is not available, the shipyard slot is not available. So hence, we come up with the idea that why not we build first before the customer even asks us for the vessels. And since then, we have systematically studied what is the requirement of the market, and hence we build before we have the order. That's what we call the build-to-order. But let's make no mistake about it. We are not building it to stock, as per se, that the name suggests, because we never turn it into a stock. It's always work in progress. Typically, 6 months before completion, the customer will come over and buy these vessels from us. And in this program, since 2005, we have delivered more than 100-plus vessels through this build-to-stock program. Now, of course, the traditional business is built to order, which, like any other yards, we are still doing that business. 20% of our business is built to order, but the rest of the business is really come from built to stock. Now, I want to talk a bit about built to stock, because built to stock is been seen as a riskier business, because you have not ordered, but the customer have not ordered, but you have built it ahead of time. But the key point is this: when the customer come 6 months before completion, buying the vessel from us, they're actually buying the visibility. They are not buying, because the oil major typically will give up the contract, before deployment, 6 months before deployment. So the tendering exercise, the awardment, and prep the boat ready for deployment, right? So that's typically a 3 to 6 month exercise. So hence, when the customer buy the boat 6 months before completion of our boat, they are buying the visibility. And that way, they are able to invest accurately, to be able to buy an asset that is fit for purpose, not buying an asset that is multi-purpose and they only can get to do one job, yet they spend many money on the different features and so forth. So by this model, a lot of our clients become very successful. And as I say in the beginning, when our client is successful, we are successful.
The thing is, in terms of your rivals, it's not difficult for them, your competition, to also build to stock, because they can just reverse engineer what you've done. But as we understand it, some of our rivals have not gone down that path, and they've gone down that path, but they've sacrificed quality in the process. Now, what is the possibility of them just doing an about turn and following the quality path and saying, all right, we'll build a stock as well, we'll follow the Nam Chong model, right? It's not a deep moat by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, I think you're right there in saying that it is not difficult to do a similar thing like what Nam Chong is doing. But it's extremely difficult to be disciplined about it. Because when you build a boat, when you have to decide what are the features to put into the boat, one of the key things that we consider what we call a down cycle protections. What it means is that we would think about how to build a boat with a right pricing that is, or costing of the asset that sustain the charter rate. Therefore, if you want to earn a lot of money, what you need to do is build the cheapest possible boat and try to go for the highest charters. Yeah. Now, but that usually don't happen. What we mean as a down cycle protection, we actually overspec the boat, but yet we must be able to overspec the boat and sell it at the market price, or slightly cheaper than the market price. Now, how do we do that? That's why we stop what we call building boats. We actually start to manufacture boats. We think of approaching like a manufacturing. We actually buy, there's an economy of scale. We buy a lot of engines and propulsion systems, everything in bulk. We design once and build many. And these are some of the concepts that we have revolutionized in the way we approach it. Hence, we build to cut down the cost to a level that is can sustain the charter rate. But at the same time, it has better features than what you would build, commission them each piece of vessel at a time, which is the traditional way of building it, which is the build to order. Because a yard will spend millions of hours in the engineering to build a boat. When the next boat come, they would have to redesign the whole thing again. But for our case, we just have to design once and build many. Hence, the engine hours saved is not just by the shipyard, but by the engine manufacturer, by the propeller manufacturer, and so forth. So we standardize things, and that drive the cost down. Hence, this benefit is being passed back to our customers.
We are talking to Leong Seng Kiat, the chief executive for the Singapore-listed Nam Chong Limited shipbuilder for the oil and gas supply market. After this, Seng Kiat, we're going to get your views in terms of your order book, your upcoming values, as well as the new markets. Leong Seng Kiat, the chief executive for the Singapore-listed Nam Chong Limited, with us on The Breakfast Grill this morning. Now, as we understand it, Seng Kiat, Nam Chong is a company which discloses its business 1.5 years in advance, and we understand from your slides that you are building 30 vessels in this year and 35 vessels for next year, which is quite a healthy construction pipeline. How many of those boats have already been ordered?
Well, it's about half of those boats are already committed. That means that there's customers who purchase those boats. Now, as I mentioned earlier, typically it is about 6 months before completion, where the customer come in. So if for that matter, that means boats that is about to deliver this year, we should be able to see that mostly are committed. And those that is next year, only some of them that which is built to order will be committed. So this is usually how our build programs.
Now, in terms of the OSV market, every year people seem to say, oh, there's so many vessels coming onto the market, there could be an oversupply situation. But every year, for the last at least 3 or 4, maybe even 5 years, the market has absorbed these new vessels into the industry. Why do you think that has been the case?
I think a lot of times, and every year, there's the doomsayer will say that, you know, we are oversupply in every single category. And there's some truth in it, that is more new boats been tuned out every day. But at the same time, we feel that the regulations, the demand of the oil major is keep evolving. And of course, that's for the better, for higher safety, better environment issues, and so forth. So the new built OSV typically be able to replace the older tonnages that is out there right now. And hence, though there is a lot of supply, but it's been absorbed by two things. First, there's an increase of demand, and secondly, the replacement of the older boats. So to date, we see that it is not really an oversupply situation. And every single boat that, for that matter, every single boat that we produce, we have always seen it go to work right immediately when it leave our yards.
Now, we understand that you build your boats to last maybe 20, 25 years, mm-hmm. but the replacement program starts at the 15th year or even less. And the other big catalyst for your business, with half your revenue from this country, is the Petronas CAPEX program. Shed some light on that for us.
Okay, there may be two questions there or one question. Now, first and foremost, we talk about the life cycle of this boat is 25 years. Now, but most oil major will require a younger younger age fleet.
Clearly, if I'm a client, I don't want to have an old lady out there doing business. I'd rather have the new boat, right? I think industry jargon is known as the old ladies, right?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay.
Now, yeah, they have a cutoff point. In most of the tender, they actually say that, you know, the vessel that is aged less than 15 years or so and so forth. So that automatically cut the life cycle of this boat into 15 years. Now, as we see that more and more all over the world are practicing that, but Petronas has been quite a successful practice that in the earlier days. And today, in fact, the Malaysian OSV, the average fleet age is about 5 to 6 years. So that is a good sign showing that in terms of our diligence in the type of vessel we use in our oil field. But at the same time, it is good business for us as a shipbuilder.
Yeah. We're talking this morning to Leong Seng Kiat, the chief executive of the SGX listed Nam Chong Limited. They are shipbuilders for the oil and gas industry. Now, there's a bit of a shift going on in the oil and gas business, Seng Kiat, because we have read over the last few years that there's been a shift towards deep water exploration and production, but that shift has come back towards mid-water and shallow water production, which of course plays into your hands because you're primarily a shallow water producer of boats. And that's the thing, because a lot of the business might have come from the North Sea and more harsh environments north of perhaps Scotland and Aberdeen, but a lot of the business has been really catered towards these shallow waters. Can you shed a light in terms of the geographical regions for where the business is coming from?
Yeah, before I answer that, Chuan, I can't help but to maybe add on another thing, that because every time you say that Leong Seng Kiat from the listed in SGX, we are basically a Malaysian company. We're HQ in Kuala Lumpur, and we're just listed in Singapore, but all our activities are mainly in Malaysia. Our yacht is in Malaysia.
So on that point, Seng Kiat, why did you decide to list in Singapore as opposed to Malaysia?
So which question you like me to answer first?
The Singapore question.
Okay. Now, I think that Singapore is good marine hub. Yeah, we believe that we would like to think that way, to bring the Malaysian flag in and claim a piece of the market share in Singapore. And we're seeing ourselves successfully have done that. I think in the investment community in Singapore, they very much accepted us as being, even though being a Malaysian company, I think they you can see that it's quite healthily traded our shares in SGX. So in many sense, we feel that, you know, we would like to not just a lot of oil and gas player today in Malaysia too. They are thinking about not just taking in back in their own backyard, but they would need to go to the world. You see, Petronas has given us a chance to build this sort of asset where we believe that the standard that we have achieved be able to deploy all over the world and not just in Malaysia.
But as shipbuilders, presumably you'll be able to switch production to a deep water vessel if need be. And of course, the ticket prices for these vessels are at least twice the normal shallow water vessel. But you don't want to do that because... Tell us why.
Yeah, okay. Now, answering your second question about, you know, what happened in the deep water and the shallow water. First, today, 70% to 80% of the production of oil fuel of the world is
globally.
Still,
okay.
Globally, yeah, still in shallow water. Now, there's a drive towards deep water because that is where the reserve going to be. Now, but in the last 5 years, I think the oil major generally find that the cost escalation in deep water is something that they have not understand yet, something that they need to control. Hence, there's a drive currently back to the mid-water and the shallow water. And being a firm that we have built, like I said, two business models, both the build-to-order and the build-to-stock. The build-to-order, we have in a number of assets that is for deep water because the client commissioned us to build. And hence, there is no risk for us to build these deep water assets. But for us, we prefer to build the mass market product, which is the shallow water. We will prefer to build a product that is what we call evergreen, because the major bulk of our energy supply today is still from shallow water. Hence, in our build to stock program, we typically targeting the shallow water.
The other segment of your business is the vessel charter, because you might build boats for your clients, and that's primarily 95% of your business, but 5% of your revenue also comes from vessel charter. Mm. Now, here's the thing. The margins for vessel charter are at least double what you have for shipbuilding, which then begs the question, why don't you do more vessel charter?
I think our approach towards chartering is always what we call the opportunistic. That means we don't have a business plan really to pursue it. We typically will go into some sort of a joint venture with our customer to pursue this market. At the beginning, we say that we, as a builder, our role here in our value chain is to support our customer who is doing the business of chartering to be able to grow in that space. For us, we want to support them to grow in that space rather than compete with our customer in that space. But having said that, in the case where our customer do not want certain vessels and they may not be in that space, yeah, we're more than happy to get involved in a higher margin business like chartering.
So we read that your order books at 1.7 billion ringgit are the highest they've ever been. Now, of course, that has a direct correlation to the success of your clients, people like Bumi Armada, people like Sparkham, China Petroleum, people like Petro Vietnam, and even Petro Padana. Mm-hmm. Now, we read in the newspapers that the big players, I mean, I'm going to cite SKP, for example, Sparkham China, they are now looking at South America, Mexico, Brazil, and that's where a lot of the inherent demand might be pent up. Is there a possibility that this could be a new sector for you, Sengkiat?
Okay, it's a very good question. In fact, since 2012, we have broke into the West Africa market through our client Bumi Armada. But subsequent to that, there are many West African clients has ordered directly with us. We also into the Latin America market in 2013, last year, has been very good for us. Right now, we're seeing a lot of inquiry coming from that area as well. So, I believe the asset that we develop, it is suitable for water depths 400 meters and below. Because of that, and because not just the build quality, but because of the specification, the features that we put in these vessels, we will see that it'll be able to compete worldwide.
The thing is, with a lot of this demand, whether it's from West Africa or even from South America, one assumes that if your clients buy a vessel from yourselves from your shipyard in Malaysia, they've got to somehow get it from here to there, which then begs the question, might you consider coming up with another shipyard in a new market?
Yeah, I think that this is the good things about this business model, that this asset, a floating asset, unlike like a property, you know.
There's a time frame to sail it from to sail it from here to there, though.
No. Yeah, there were extra costs to sail it from here to wherever it needs to be. Compared to the Malaysian owner, just take the rear and they have the vessel here. But having said that, it is still economically more viable, number one, for them. Number two, this is not a commodity, as in if they need a vessels, if they can find that from the North Sea, even though they are all the way in New Zealand, they most probably still have to sail the boat from one corner of the world to the other corner of the globe.
Second, we're looking at your financials and your gross margins at 22-odd%, but your net profit margins and your operating margins are about 17%. That's very close, which I guess indicates that your overheads are very much in control. Your overheads would very much be centered on things like your human capital as well as your equipment, your propellers and engines and so on and so forth. Can you give some kind of visibility as to these cost elements in the 2 or 3 years ahead?
Yeah, when we talk about operating profits, it is after the construction costs. That means this is the kind of gross margin that we are looking at. And of course, what play between the net gross margin and the operating would be mainly just headcounts. As a company, we are not have a lot of staff or things like that. Because our focus is very much an outsourced model. So a lot of our activity has been outsourced to third party, even include some of the human resource. And at the same time, I think as a company, we are very conscious of cost, knowing that especially that we are in a very competitive industry like shipbuilding. So hence, this is a critical component that we always have put our hands on to control it.
Which then means your cash flow is very strong, and I think your cash reserves are up by 70% on the year to 2013. You've got about $150 million cash, I think. What are the plans inherent in there?
I think the cash is always something that we like to have a lot, like everybody else. And our thoughts is very much what we call a risk mitigation or risk management. Inherently, some people do think that our model have a bit of risk. Hence, we always have a reserve there to prepare for rainy days. Yeah.
And of course, your controlling shareholder is the chairman, Tong Siu Kiong. He still controls, plus his family, over 60% of the shares. You have said that market volume might be healthy at 2 or 3% of your market cap, but still, I'm sure your institutional investors will want some more liquidity in the stock. Is there any plan to do so?
The company has many other alternative ways to raise fund right now. We have a MTN program that's $600 million. We only draw down $200 million. And hence, we have no desire to dilute the shareholders per se right now.
Okay, Seng Kiat, thank you so much for your time and thank you for spending time with us.
Thank you, Chuan.
That was Leong Seng Kiat, the chief executive of the Singapore listed Nam Chong Limited, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.